Oh, I love this city. I love this place called Crossroads. It's in Oakley and in Mason. Let me just brag on y'all for a moment. What I love is last week we started this journey. In case you're wondering what's going on here, we're in a 6-week journey where we're looking at an intersection of two avenues, which represents how Crossroads is at a crossroads. And one of the issues is our spiritual development. How are we growing spiritually? And I'm going to be talking about that today. And another avenue is the needs that are around this place, around our world, that God has called us to, financial needs, and how do we engage in those? And so last week, we start talking about the four things that we're doing. We start getting us primed. And at the end of the service, I said, hey, there's this documentary that's showing. If you haven't been invited over to somebody's house or you couldn't make it, we have open viewings Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday here in Oakley and one up in Mason. And you know, you guys turn on a dime. 2,100 people showed up Monday through Friday. It's amazing. How many of you right now have seen the documentary? Raise your hand. All of you are like, come on now, get out of town. That's what I love about Cross. You guys don't just think things, you actually do things. If you haven't seen it yet, we have one other way for you to see it. We've actually put the entire 63 minutes or so online at crossroads.net/gamechange. Find some popcorn, find your favorite beverage, park yourself in front of a computer monitor, and really get ready for 63 minutes of blessing. It is really great. Am I right, all of us who have seen it? I mean, oh really, just get there. And in that documentary, we're talking about the four different initiatives that we're looking to push forward. And today, we're going to talk a little bit about the multi-site initiative. We've got a little video to show you what multi-site is, different sites of Crossroads all over the region. And while we take that, we're going to have people who are volunteers come forward with little green bags. And we're going to have the opportunity to be generous, just regular ongoing generosity. If you've been around here for a while, you know this is what fuels life change inside of this room, inside of Mason, or across the globe. If you're newer today, we want you to receive. We're happy you're here. Sit back. Maybe you'll learn something. Maybe you might get excited about the things that are happening here. Maybe God wants you here too, and maybe not. Maybe you come here once, you go, that is enough, and I'm out of here. Either way, we are excited you're here. Just let that bag pass by, and let's check out what multi-site looks like.
If it weren't for Crossroads Mason having been formed, I don't really know where I would be right now. I had a little bit of exposure to a couple different church communities by way of family, but it was never something that I had really adopted. You would probably could argue that I was an atheist, although I held on to the belief that maybe there was some other power at work in the universe.
We really want to engage people who don't know who Jesus is, who have given up on church, but not necessarily on God. And we want to help them understand that we speak with a different dialect. We speak in a language that is unique to Christendom, and helps them to really figure out that who I thought Jesus was is really different than who he actually is. And it draws them in to the things that we're doing around here that just impact so many different people.
After coming for the first few weeks, I began to volunteer. I actually joined a community group and really began to read the Bible and understand other people's experiences. And I wanted to be more involved in my community. And, you know, to me, this was very much my community. That's what set in motion a lot of the things that led to where I'm at now. You know, I like to say that it wasn't the fact that I sought God. It was almost like God saw an opportunity to expose me to him, and I realized what I was missing out on.
When we were really getting serious about multi-site, we went and just kind of pulled some data to see the people who call Crossroads home, who are attending today, where do they live? And just looking at, you know, kind of placing those people over a map of the city, the greater Cincinnati area, we discovered that people come to Oakley or Mason sites, our current locations, as far south, you know, past Union, Kentucky, on north, close to Dayton. That might be great for a couple who's coming on their own, but when they live so far away from any location that we have, it lessens the likelihood that their friends who are their neighbors live next to them in their general neighborhood are going to want to make that drive, that substantial drive, to come to Mason or to Oakley.
that's a lot for a family with two kids to make that kind of drive and commitment. And even though I would make that commitment now, I really wouldn't have had any reason in my own mind that I should.
The thing that we're about most is helping our friends who don't know Jesus come into relationship with him. And so ideally what we want to look at is finding locations, planning them throughout the city that are 15-minute drive times for where we already have an existing pocket of people who are familiar with who Crossroads is. The great thing about multi-site is that it engages a greater number of people into this mission that we believe that we're called to and invites them to participate in something that is much bigger than themselves. If I'm bringing my friend here and there's not a seat for them, then they're not going to feel welcome, they're not going to feel received. And so we want to create more seats, more opportunity for those of us who call Crossroads home to bring their friends, invite their friends into the movement that's happening here. And when you do that, when you connect the vision and something that is bigger than yourself, that opportunity to really get engaged with that, it changes your life. It totally changes your life. And where there is no purpose, there becomes purpose. Where there is no community, where there's isolation, you are swept up in the movement to change the trajectory of someone's life, yours included.
Please welcome Mark Setcher, the campus pastor of our Mason campus. Woo-hoo. Mark. You know, a lot of people in here at Oakley are maybe kind of thinking, multi-site, Mason, Schmation. I mean, I don't know, it doesn't affect me. I'm not sure if it's good, not sure if it's bad, not sure if it's going to work, not sure if it's not going to work. What would you say to those kind of losers?
It already is working. It's already working. We've got our 2-year anniversary actually this month. And it is exploding, actually. We've got about, if I could paint a brief picture, 1,000 to 1,200 people coming every weekend, experiencing the same quality teaching, live, fabulous worship, having unbelievable life experiences together, and they're doing it because we made this decision about 5 years ago to say, we need to reach our city more effectively. If you look at that yellow map that was showing all the pin dots of people all over the
community.
In fact,
I might also say, just to just take some of your thunder, you guys, Mason, grew last year 30-some percent, outgrew Oakley. Not that we're competitive or anything, but Mason is actually beating Oakley.
Yes, yeah. We are. It's because people are available. In fact, there's a gal in the first row that has a Mason cheer on. I think it was just to cheer me on. How long did it take you to drive? 7 hours to come down and back by the time? I'm serious. If you look at that map, you see there are people up in Lebanon, people up in Dayton, people down in Tennessee. No, I'm just kidding. Who are coming every weekend to one place. And that's not the way any business would do it. They would not put one mega bank only downtown, one mega school only. They have to reach people where they live. And there's so many different things we can do because we're investing in communities where we live. I have changed. In fact, grab that.
Yes. If you haven't got one, how good was this week, those of us who did it? How amazing was it?
Yeah.
Really. If you don't have one of these, they're all gone. We give them away for free. They're all gone. Should have been here last week. But if you still want one, you can get one. The exact thing is on the website. It's PDF. Download it. Copy it. It's great. Use this. And we were talking before, both of us were kind of hit pretty hard by this week.
For me, when I went through it, I was amazingly contrasted of what I've done in the past for one of the exercises. For those of you who've been coming for a while, you know that we've been challenged to think about our friends. It's part of the mission, part of who we are. Think about our friends that we would love to include. You saw some slides where we wrote up on the rafters and things like that about people that we were making space for. And when I've gone through those exercises before, I'd fill out, 5, 10, whatever names, and I'd put it up. We had a toothpaste list, so every morning when we were brushing our teeth, we'd pray for these people. And I'd filled out my list very religiously in the past and was very excited about it. But the thought of my neighbors and the thought of the people that I am doing life with filled my page, and all of a sudden I was overcome with what a different mindset you have when you just can't keep what God is trying to do in your life to yourself. And I think about, a story that you share often about the friends who bring this guy who needs some healing, and they cut a hole through the roof, and they drop the guy in just so he can get an encounter with Jesus. And I think that is exactly why multi-site has to happen. We have We have a responsibility for what God is doing in our lives, the way that our lives are taking on meaning and purpose and the hope that we have. We have got to go and invest and grab our friends and bring them into these encounters. And multi-site is exactly the way to do that. One church, many places, blanket the city.
Just as God took on flesh and came to us, came to us, He also has His image bearers are to go to others.
Absolutely.
And we're looking to go to others. Our last little thing. I was struck by this. You were struck by the by the pace list. I was struck by this last question where it says, God has used Crossroads in my life too. And as I reflected on it, I thought, man, I came to Cincinnati 15 years ago as a idealistic and at the same time somewhat cynic of the local church. I had idealism of what a local church should be as I read this thing, but I was cynical because most of what I experienced was dead religion.
Yeah.
And I can't believe how I have gotten a rebirth of passion for what God does in the local church. I've seen this place, people like Dustin, atheists, come to know Christ.
Yeah.
I've seen this place, the rich and the poor sit and worship together. I've seen this place, a heart for poverty and selling of one another's possessions to help one another.
Yeah.
I've seen literal physical healing from prayer happen here. I've seen how prophecy actually works. I've actually seen how people have fun and like each other in a church. I mean, all these things that are not normal, but we want to see these reproduced throughout the whole region.
And if you had the chance to see what goes on there every weekend, the lives that you're getting a little glimpse of. Last week we had Vivian, who works up in the sound booth up in Mason. This week we got to see Dustin. There are stories like that throughout our church. We got half of our people who are attending were not ever Crossroad regular attenders. So it is an absolute imperative that we do this thing. And the only way that we do it is by inviting and by investing. So we need a over and above gift to be able to handle what we need to plant across the city.
Hey, you know what? I want to make, you're done. You're not going to talk anymore.
Okay.
I just want to tell you for everybody, I'm so appreciative of your friendship. You've been an amazing support to me today and amazing support to my life. It's great to be not just in ministry with people, but to have deep friendships. And I'm thank you for being in my life.
Thanks, buddy.
Really.
Love you.
You know, most of us have one issue that keeps us from either embracing Jesus or keeps us from having the kind of spiritual life that would take us to whole new places. For some of us, the one issue is perhaps an abusive background. Something very ugly and dark happened to you a long time ago, and it constantly keeps you from going forward because you may think to yourself, how can I give myself to God when He seemingly allowed this to happen on my watch? Some of us have this major issue with how do all religions fit together? Do they fit together? What happens with this person who believes this over there? And that it's just this issue that plagues us. Some of us in here, there's a verse that you've read in the Bible or someone told you about something that's in the Bible, and you go, man, that thing right there, I don't know that I could ever fully embrace God or really have the kind of life that Jesus says I should have, because that thing, that just bothers me. I don't know if I can believe that. For others of us, you may be like me, where a central issue that is always present is an issue of money. It's an issue of, man, I don't have enough money. What do I got to do to get more money? Or when you do have money, it's an issue of how do I spend this money? I flip-flop all over the place. I've had no money, I've had money, I've had convictions of money, thinking, well, maybe if I was really committed to God, I would go and live in a commune with a bunch of people, and we would have common possessions that enable more money to be given away. I've thought, maybe that is the way that the Bible teaches. Then I've had the other perspective where I say, no, God's a God of blessing, and if He's placed me in a country that has some prosperity to it, that I happen to enjoy some of the fruits of America, that's not necessarily a bad thing. And I go back and forth, and I think, how much should I give? How much should I save? And I am plagued with exactly how to handle money, because I either handle money or money handles me. It's one of those two things. And if you're at all like me, you are what is called normal. You are normal. Jesus talks more about money than anything else. And in fact, the Bible talks more about money and possessions than faith and prayer combined. In fact, if you took all the verses on faith, all the verses on prayer, added them up, and then times them by 20, you would start to come close to all the verses in the Bible that are on money and possessions, because money is a spiritual power that is wooing us to love money more than God. And so where we start today on this spiritual journey is looking at the first step in the process, a three-step process. Number one, surrender. Surrender, listen, do. These are the steps that we're going to be working over the remainder of our time. And today we're looking at surrender. And I'm going to look at one of Jesus' teachings on money. It comes to the book of Matthew, chapter 25. Jesus tells this one story in two different ways in his life that's recorded in the Bible, and that leads me to believe that he told this story over and over and over again, depending on who he was with, the context he was with. This was one of his go-to illustrations of how money is supposed to be viewed and how we are to surrender to God. And so I'm just going to read it to you, and you can follow right along. Matthew chapter 25, verse 14 says this: "For it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted to them his property." Parables are stories that Jesus made up. They're not true stories, but they are true life stories where Jesus is using a scenario that could have happened to teach an eternal spiritual principle. And right away, he starts off by saying, there is a man goes away, and this man goes away who is somewhat seemingly distant, seemingly. This man represents God who entrusts his possessions to people. This is God. God entrusts everything. This is point number one. God entrusts everything. Everything that I have, everything that you have actually comes from God. This is a game changer. When you come to understand this, it changes everything in your life. Last campaign that we had, the crazy campaign several years ago, I was having coffee with a friend of mine who goes to another church and has some bank accounts that have a lot of zeros in it. And we were sitting down, and he said, "Well, how's the campaign going?" And I said, it was like week three or week four. I said, it's going good. And he said, "Well, how are you doing?" I said, "Oh, I'm doing fine. How's the money coming in?" And I said, I have no idea. None's come in. He looked, "What are you talking about?" "So we haven't asked for commitments yet." And he was dumbfounded with me, utterly dumbfounded, because in the nonprofit world, the way you get money is you have quote unquote lead gifts. You get the people who have a lot of jack that commit ahead of time that makes you feel good, like, "Oh, this can be done. And then they'll even do a matching gift, which is supposed to motivate peons like you and me to give more than we normally would. Basically, what it does is you're really not important. Everybody else, the big money's coming here. They've already just skimmed off some of their excess, and they're putting it out there, and won't you kind of do a little?" That's the way the game is normally played. I said, "No, this is not what we're doing. We are on a spiritual journey. We're on a spiritual," and some of you I know, out of the best of hearts and intentions, have sent an email or sent a check-in. Don't do that. We're not thinking money right now. We're not accepting gifts for this. I want to encourage you to not think numbers. It's too early for that. This is a spiritual process. We got to get this stuff down. And number one is surrender. It is God entrusts everything. I have a code here that represents that everything that I have, everything that is in my possession, is not mine, but it is God's. I really learned this when I was first year in college. I was in a ministry training program, so I had a partial scholarship, and I was interning at a church. And then my parents were generous enough to pay for the rest of all of my tuition, and I lived off campus, and so they gave me a little bit of money for some basic bills and for food. And partially because it wasn't a lot of money, and partially because I didn't know how to manage money, that money was gone after the first week. So I had three more weeks to figure out how to live, no meal ticket, no like cafeteria thing, just 3 weeks. And the result of which, I would go for weeks eating only peanut butter and jelly, or weeks eating only oatmeal. And I dropped weight. I went from having a musclehead physique as a middle linebacker in high school to my first year in college. People saw me on through the year, and they asked me if I was sick. I said, "Are you okay?" I was like, because I just dropped all kind of weight because I couldn't afford the protein. I didn't have it and going. So I would learn all kind of things. Like, if you go to Eaton Park, we have any Pittsburgh residents who can remember Eaton Park in here, yeah. Eaton Park is sort of like the Denny's of Pittsburgh. Like if you go to Eaton Park, for 55 cents, you can get unending coffee. And then if you're nice to the waitress and ask, they'll give you a free dinner roll. So I would go, man, I'd just camp out in Eaton Park for a couple hours, free coffee, free dinner rolls. And I was happy to give my 15% tip on that 55 cents when I left. It was fine. One day I went in there after a church service, after the Episcopal church I was with, went in there, and in there was a family, the Rogers family, that I'd been building into their kids in the student ministry I was serving in. And I walked up to pay the bill, and Jim Rogers, the father, comes up behind me, and he puts his hand into my pocket. And I'm thinking to myself, Jim, I didn't know you were that kind of guy. Puts his hand into my pocket, and then takes his hand out of my pocket. Thankfully, he didn't do anything else while it was in my pocket. He took his hand out of my pocket. That was 11:45 special. I didn't say it to anybody. Only you could handle that kind of immature humor. Takes it out of my pocket. Gosh, that was a great line. Why did I hit that the other five services? That would have been really good. He gives me a ride back to the house where me and a bunch of other guys were staying, and I get out of the car, and he says, hey, Brian, before you put those khakis in the wash, just make sure you check your pockets. And I had a sense of what he had done, and I was embarrassed. I said, I know, thanks. And I went up to my room, and I pulled out what was in my pocket, and there was a brand new, crisp $20 bill. That leveled me. That blew me. That was the first time I had ever been given money, had ever been given anything by somebody else. All that I had, I'd either work for, or it seemed like an obligation from a distant family member on a holiday. Just somebody like blessing me with a $20 bill just utterly blew my mind. The next week, the same thing happens. I go to the same restaurant, come to the same cash register, the same guy sticks his hand in my pocket. This time I stop him. I stop and say, Jim, you don't need to do that. And he said something I'll never forget, which has formed me spiritually and everybody in my family since. I said, you don't need to do that. And he says, I know, but it's all God's and I'm just redistributing it. That so knocked me over and so affected my heart that you put me anywhere around Pittsburgh this day, I'm going to Jim and Sally Rogers' house. I'm going there because there's something that they gave me that transcended the $40 over 2 weeks. That has affected every, and I find this is really the story inside of this book. These guys get things from the owner. And here's how the story continues. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away, and he who received the 5 talents went at once, traded with them, and he made 5 talents more. So also he who had the 2 talents made 2 talents more. But he who had received the 1 talent went, dug in the ground, and hid his master's money. Now after a long time, the master of those servants came home and settled accounts with them. And he who had received the 5 talents came forward bringing 5 talents more, saying, Master, you delivered to me 5 talents. Here, I've made 5 talents more. Now, there's 5, 2, and 1 talent. What we learn is number 2, God distributes unequally. God entrusts unequally. And what I have to do in the part of surrender is to just from time to time, call out, bring everything up on the table and recognize, God, I just want to recognize that you've entrusted these things to me. You have entrusted to me my bookshelves. This is not my bookshelf. This is your, I recognize, I surrender. Doesn't mean I lose it. It just means I bring it up in the moment of spiritual sanity. I say, I didn't create the wood from which this was made, and I didn't even buy this with my own money. This was your money and my dog. Is not my dog, but he is your dog, including the furniture on which I sit, where he sits. This is Winston, my dog, actually God's dog. He's a great dog, except one problem with him. He has this thing called submissive urination. I've never heard of this before. He's 4 or 5 months old. As a sign of his submissiveness, when I walk into the room, he rolls on his back and pees himself. He pees all over God's carpet. That's what he does. It's not my carpet, it's God's carpet. always tried to teach this to my kids. I've learned with my kids, with any kids, there are two things. If I can give my kids two things, life will be all downhill for them. Number one, if I can give my kids a healthy understanding of who Jesus is, the centrality of Jesus, life will start to make. Number two, if I can teach my kids how to handle money instead of money handling them. If you have an understanding of God in the flesh and he is in your life, Jesus, and you know how to handle money, man, life will be downhill for you. So to teach my kids this, every single one, take them to McDonald's. Take them to McDonald's and little kids, and I'll take them and I'll buy a little Happy Meal and have little French fries. They'll be nibbling on their French fries like little rabbits. And I'll just reach over and I'll just take a couple fries and I'll just take the fries and just start eating them. And they're thinking, I only have so many fries. They'll go, it's my fries. I say, your fries? Your fries? Did you buy those fries? No. Did you make them? No. No, they're not your fries. They're God's fries. In fact, God blessed me with the money to buy you the fries. In fact, I've decided that you're not going to have any. I take all the fries, jam in my mouth, and say, God gives, God takes away. Honestly, done with every single kid. This is not your stuff. This is God's stuff, and he happens to entrust it. God's entrusted many, many, many things. God's entrusted to me accounts. Everything in my checking account is God's. Everything in my savings account, everything in my Vanguard retirement account is God's. He gives me all kinds of stuff like cable television. The money to have cable television is all from God. He gives me my ability to have credit cards, my driver's license, my iPhone, actually Crossroads iPhone, is actually from God. I have things like my car, my house keys. I tell you what, when you have a house that you think is yours and all of a sudden a fire comes and takes it away and everything that you have and you have no insurance, you learn real quick it is not yours. And you also learn that God is generous because he blesses you back. See, God entrusts all these things unequally. I've got stuff that you may not have. There's certain things that you may have that like you may not have. A black motorcycle. I am entrusted with a black motorcycle. God entrusts everything to your heart right now. Your heart is beating. You've done nothing to create your heart. You've done nothing to cause an electrical impulse to fire inside of you from 45 to 75 beats a minute. Nothing for that. God just does that for you. You say, man, I've worked harder for all this. Do you have a? Yeah, maybe. But who gave you your work ethic? Where did you get that? Why is it that you may have had more drive than somebody else? Doesn't mean that somebody else shouldn't be more drive. Where did that come from? Your ability to make money in sales. Where did you get your extroverted personality? Where did that happen? Your ability to crunch numbers. Where did that come from? How was it that you learned your math tables before other people? Maybe there's some unique ability that God's given. God has given all of us things that other people don't get. I think as regularly how God has given unequal things to me, things I don't deserve. I shouldn't be a part of Crossroads. It's like falling off a log being here right now. I have the greatest job in the world. I love what I do. It's awesome. And I think regularly, why me? There's many other people that are more qualified than me, don't use inappropriate humor, and should actually be here. Why God me? Why? I don't know. Unequal. I think regularly, why do some of you have a good back and I don't? I've got discs that are bursting. I've had two discs that are burst. Fortunately, they're calcifying again. I'm not in pain right now. Don't boo-hoo for me. But I think regularly. I want to be active. I take care of myself. I can't play basketball. I'm not ever going to be able to do a marathon any longer. I can't take the compression of the disc. Now, what I have to do, I get to do elliptical pull-ups and push-ups. That's about it. And some of you don't care at all about your body. You don't take care of your body. Yet you have a good back and all you want to do is watch television. And I think to myself, why do they get the nice discs? And I don't know. I don't know. God gives unequally. And you know what you call all of this stuff up here? All this stuff is called extra. This is all extra. We all have different amounts, different things on our... My goodness, how could I forget? Near and dear to my heart is my family. Yes, right. Right next to my heart, my family. Now, here is the posture of spiritual sanity, spiritual growth. The posture is when you take all these things and you live an open, surrendered life. This is the posture of spiritual maturity and spiritual sanity. When everything you have, you live an open life with God, where you're not trying to hide anything, you're not trying to, oh, I just broke Winston's leg there. Sorry about that, buddy. When you are just like this, just holding on. This is the posture of default. The human default condition is to take our stuff, whatever God's given you, just mine. That's why I want to take those French fries away and loosen the grip that says, no. See, because when I'm like this, God can take away and God can give. This family photo is a difficult one. I'm thankful for the family I have, but I tell you what, I got to realize they're not my kids, not my wife. I don't own them. God has entrusted them to me. I don't own them at all. My lowest memories of 15 years here at Crossroads is doing funerals for kids who have died tragically. You're just not supposed to outlive your kid. You're just not. And I've noticed and watched parents who have dealt with this in different ways, and I don't know that you ever really fully get over it. But one thing I've seen is those that go on and recapture joy in their life do so because all along they were like this with their families. And then God decides to allow or to take away, and instead of, okay, it's going to be hard, I'm going to figure it out, but God always been your kids. Your ultimate responsibility, not mine. All this is, not everyone gets a family, not everyone gets, all this is, you know how I know this is extra? Because none of this do I need to sustain myself. I have no food up here, and I have no basic clothing up here. This is all extra. Love's going, I don't have extra. Have you ever gone in the closet and looked at the clothes and said, I have nothing to wear? What do you mean you have nothing to wear? You got stuff lined up? What you mean is you don't have anything that makes you feel good right now to make you wear. Have you ever just realized, oh, man, I don't have a lot of stuff in my life? And then you go to South Africa or India, and you go, oh, my goodness, I have more than 99% of everybody in that entire continent. What it is, I might not have as much as somebody else, but make no mistake about it. If you live in America, you and I have extra. We have things that are not being used and haven't been used for a long time, yet we're going, man, you know, mine. I was thinking about this, think about mine, of the miners in Chile. How about an amazing story? 33 people, 69 days, miles underneath the ground, miles. And everything that they lived on came in a container this size, actually two of them, in a larger container, fit inside this container, drop down through a hole they could drill more quickly into their cavity, and they sustained themselves with everything that fit here. Of course, they didn't have a dog that would have fit in here or a motorcycle that fit in here. If their cell phone did fit in there, it wouldn't have worked down there. There's another one. You know, I have extra one. The stuff you have works really well, but you just want to upgrade. Yes, that's what people have extra can do. Not that there's anything bad with it, but just recognize, man, you've been entrusted with a lot. But they lived for 69 days with only things that could fit inside of here. Our needs are very, very minimal. But even though God gives unequally, he always gives generously. Always gives generously. Always gives beyond what we are currently using. And we find this with these people here. 5 talents, 2 talents, 1 talent. What's a talent? A talent is a measure of weight. And a talent would be equal to 6,000 denarii or denarius. They had a saying back in those times that another day, another denarii. Because a denarii, 1 denarii, was worth 1 day laborer's wage. 6,000 denarii went into a talent. So if you had 5 talents, you had 30,000 days of wages. If you had 2 talents, 12,000 days. One talent, the guy who got the least, who had the unequal amount, still had 6,000 days of wages. God gives unequally, and what he now does is he starts holding them accountable. His master said to him, who had received 5 and doubled it, his master said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. God holds all trustees accountable. If I don't own anything, if I'm not the owner of anything, if everything I have is entrusted by God, then I am a trustee. And that's what organizations have trustees for. They don't own anything, but they are a trustee of the stewardship of it. And this says that God will hold me accountable. Now, when we hear the word accountable, we think, oh, God's going to whack me. No, not necessarily. No, not at all. It just means there will come a day we will go before God, and we'll have to talk about and have a conversation about how things got dispersed, how things got used and leveraged with all that he has blessed us with. See, this is why many of us, you want a number, you want to figure out that, because you want to just be done with this journey. Because it is easier to hear a number and wrestle with it. I'm just done. Okay, I did that. This is hard. This is hard. To go through a process that you bring everything in your life, your entire self, up on the table and say, God, just recognize it's all yours. And then what we're going to do next is say, God, any of these things you want back? Or any things you want to call dibs on before it even gets on the table? That's hard. That's really hard. Because our assumption is, if I ever really went through a journey like this, if I ever did this, if I ever was really open and vulnerable with God with all my stuff, man, God would strip me naked. I would be living in a van down by the river. That's what I would. I would have nothing. If I ever really fully surrendered to God, God would strip me butt naked. I'd have a loincloth living in Kenya somewhere. And my question for you is this. Whoever gave you this view of God? Whoever gave you the view of God that the closer you get with him, the more he abuses you and rakes you over the coals? Where do we ever get this opinion that God is anti anything nice in your life? I don't know where we got this. But see, this is what money wants to convince us. Money wants to convince us, never take an honest look at it because you're going to lose me and everything is going to be really, really hard in your life. And this is why God wants, no. I'm holding you accountable. I'm coming. I know where you are. That's my stuff. I'm watching and hoping you use my stuff and enjoy my stuff properly. Guy who has 5 talents, he doubles it. Comes back, here's 5 more. And his master said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will give you much. Enter into the joy of your master. He says the same thing to this person who has the 5 talents and the 2 talents. What he says is, you are good and faithful. Well done, good and faithful servants. Good and faithful servants, good and faithful stewards, good and faithful trustees provide a return. They don't just keep and save and hoard and manage and wax and buff and wash. They think through, how is all that God has given me, how do I provide a return for God? Because everything I have right now will eventually return to God. Someone once asked John D. Rockefeller, how much is enough? And he said, just a little bit more. Money wants to convince us that you never have enough, you just need a little bit more. And then when he finally died, somebody asked his accountant, they said, hey, how much did John D. leave? And he said, John D. Rockefeller left it all. There are no U-Hauls behind hearses. Everything that you have will be returned. Everything you have will be returned. You will be returned to the ground. Everything. He who dies the most toys dies. The death rate is hovering right around 100%. It is for certain that you will die. And when you understand there's a limited amount of time that you have to have an impact on the world, you start living for something that's going to really give God joy and bring joy to you that transcends more digits in an account, that transcends more financial goals that are they your personal goals for what you own, or are they really tied up in the identity and character of God? Jesus also talks with another person, the person who has 1 talent. And look what he says to him. Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here, you can have what is yours. He plays according to the rules of the game. If you were to give me something that was yours, the most important thing for me would be to protect it. I wouldn't want it to be scratched when it comes back to you. I wouldn't want it to have lost any of its luster. I would want to return it in its original condition. And apparently this guy is playing according to the normal rules of the game. He says, I did my duty. I returned it in equal condition. And look what God says back to him. "You wicked and lazy servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I scattered no seed." In other words, God says, "Well, of course, I'll do whatever I want, wherever I want, because I own it all. You understood this, and yet you didn't really leverage this." He says, "Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers. At least they would have given you 0.04% in this economy. You should have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming, I should have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to the one who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who does not have, even what he has will be taken away." We have a saying in our country, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. And the truth of the statement, it is a sad thing that there is amazing opportunities for people who have resources, great interest rates. Yeah, that's true. That's a sad statement that unfortunately is an unjust way that our society operates. But in the kingdom, there also is an aspect where God, how he stewards his resources, he uniquely guides resources to a place where there would be a return. And we all do the same thing. We got it to where there's a money manager who's working hard. And he says this person that's taking the easy route out of just hoarding and burying, says wicked and lazy. See, the good and faithful always have return, and the wicked and lazy have excuses. I didn't do it. I had to save for a rainy day. I don't know what. Wicked and lazy always have excuses. Amazing here. Jesus doesn't call the pornographer wicked. He doesn't call a person who fails to mix the recyclables or separate the recyclables wicked. He doesn't call somebody who votes differently than you or I wicked. He calls somebody who has been entrusted with things and takes the easy, safe route of just preserving, keeping it. One of the things that excited me about the mine rescue was that we were focused as a world, we were focused on getting 33 people to hold, as we should have been. Millions of dollars were spent as they should have spent. And the reason something inside of me came alive is because we as a church are going after people in dark places. Many of you, you know the hole that you were in before God got a hold of your life through this thing called Crossroads. You were in depression. You were in addiction. You were in a broken, failed marriage. You were in the midst of everything going right in your life, but yet something inside just not clicking, a lack of joy, a lack of peace, a lack of perspective. You were in dark places. And guess what? People came after you. They came after you. They came after you to bless you, to rescue you, to bring you to a new place. That's why the most important money the Crossroads will ever invest, the most important stuff by far, is blessing people, bringing people to Jesus who live in Cincinnati. That is always where the preponderance of our resource will go. It's always our primary mission. Well, always what excites us most. That's why we came to Cincinnati, the Tone family, 15 years ago. March 24th, 1996, we opened up our doors almost 15 years ago, and we had all kinds of things we had to spend money on. We had 11 people that were part of the core group, and then it grew to 35 before the services opened, and we spent our money on stuff like advertising, salaries, sound equipment, video equipment, signage, tape duplicate, all these kind of things. We spent a lot of money, and then about a week before we were ready to open up, we realized we needed to get toys in the nursery. We thought, oh man, we don't have any money for those things. What are we going to do? And Liv and I thought, we got plenty of toys over at our house. So we raided the kids' little chests, and we took all their toys, and we brought them to Crossroads, and we stuck them in the nursery. Here's an early picture of the first little nursery, and you can see that little play school kitchen thing, easy bake oven, dealy, whatever the heck that thing is. That was Lena's, and now it was Crossroads. And so there it was, and her and Jake came in and saw this thing that they didn't understand what was going to happen. Jake had this little purple Tonka truck that was towing a jet ski. And he comes in and he sees this kid taking his thing and jamming it into a wall. And he goes, that's my truck. I said, whose truck? That's God's truck. That's right, that's God's truck. And God wanted it back. God wanted it back. And that's what it was. Look at all these kids that are reaching. They learned something. Yeah, you don't want me as a dad. No, they learned something. And I'll tell you what. Our kids are in a place they are because they've understood the process of what it's like to invest for, and there is joy that comes with faithful surrender. When you come to a place of surrender, there is a joy that transcends understanding. Joy. The guy who had one talent and to play it safe, he did not have a level of joy when he came to his master, and certainly he didn't have a level of joy afterwards. The other ones who did things for return, who were surrendered, God says, man, well done. Come and share in your master's happiness. Now let's go to school on somebody who's in our midst who went through the campaign, our last campaign, and went through this process of surrender, and let's see what we can learn from him. Check this out.
I was brought up in a less than faithful house, and my wife always challenged me when we were in our Catholic faith, and I wasn't getting a lot out of that, and decided to make a move to Crossroads after being in a men's group with guys for about 2 years prior to coming to Crossroads, but all the guys were from Crossroads. So through them inviting me and knowing that I needed to be deeper in my faith and challenged, my wife and I made a decision to come to Crossroads and to try it out, and have never left. We've been there about 9 years now, and just love every minute of it. We were there for the Crazy campaign, and when that first came up, I was excited to be part of that. My wife and I talked extensively about what we could put on the table and live without. It was a mark in our marriage. It was a mark in our faith journey that we knew we weren't in charge and that we had to put it all up and not just choose the things that we would do. It was an exciting journey. I mean, we were looking at putting Becky's wedding ring on eBay. We were looking at selling our house and downsizing. We were looking at getting rid of cars and how it looked on a daily basis for us. And that was difficult. And once we put it all on the table, though, it became very clear that we were willing and wanting to do whatever that looked like. So it was a tough time, but our journey only really began at the commitment where we felt God telling us to double what we had thought we could do. So it put us far beyond what we could write a check for, far beyond what we were capable of doing. And we had no idea how that would work out. And through a real estate business that we had, we put all the profits towards the campaign. Through changing jobs, my 401k had to be rolled over, and so we put that towards the campaign. And even though our tax guy said we were absolutely crazy, it was the right thing to do. We knew, we had no question about putting that money towards that. And we know what the money's doing. We know where that money goes. We know it goes right back out to help people. I've been in a slump with my faith over the last year or so. When this campaign came back up here just recently, I became again very nervous and not understanding what I should do as part of that. Right now for us as a family, the challenge of finances is very difficult. We don't have a big pot of gold that is waiting to go. So trying to figure that out, I need to be struggling with what that looks like again. And it gave me a spark again. And I can't wait to go through this journey because it's something that I know I need again as a Christian, as a husband, as somebody that's now in charge of our finances. I need to be struggling with what that looks like again.
Please welcome Paul Zarwanka. Now, Paul, you say in that video, if I hear you right, you've been struggling with your faith, but even just the beginning of this journey has already kind of begun to grow you. Is that what you're saying? Or what are you saying there?
Yeah, it's something that over the last year, I took our finances over in our house. And the last campaign, my wife was wearing the weight of that on her shoulders as we met that commitment. And so this time for me to be doing that, which I should have been doing back when, it's somewhat nerve-wracking to me, but at the same time, the excitement of being able to mentor my children through that process, to be the role model in my family and to others, it's nerve-wracking, but it's exciting for me that I'll get to live through this journey and be faithful through it.
Hey, one thing, too, that I learned from you, and we've talked about this before, I'll just say it right now, is that don't be surprised if the people you're in relationship with, you start to have tensions pop up around this. Whether it's your friends, someone you're dating, you're married to, When you start dealing with the issue of surrender, get ready for tension to pop up. And it's a good tension. There's probably deeper, more important things than money that are happening inside of your relationships that this journey will pop up. That's why I say we are going to grow spiritually beyond whatever happens financially. Embrace that. Go through the storm. Don't run away with it because it's probably something God's putting his finger on. And you guys have experienced that.
Yeah, we had several arguments and debates about what we should do. And really, once we said, you know what, put it all up. And we'll see what happens, that we're not in charge. And God took a pretty good chunk of what we had. And we were really wondering, you know, the easy thing would be to leave Crossroads, just go take the easy route. But because we did that and because we went through that journey, our marriage, we were at a definite peak in our faith and our marriage. Mm-hmm. Because of the process.
Any final counsel you have for us? You've been through this before, you're going through it again. Anything that we all ought to do?
I think two things. One, mentoring, for me, mentoring our kids through that process, I think is extremely important. And secondly, just taking a walk of faith that God will meet you. I mean, we put up a number that we could not have at all written a check for. And when we were faithful and it was just amazing how God showed up and how we were actually able to pay that commitment off early. Mm. So it was a freeing journey for us.
Well, listen and do is coming weeks ahead, but thank you so much for talking surrender for us. Hey, it's Thank Paul.
It.
Hey, you know what? I'm going to tell you something. All week, you know, I get paid to be here. It's my job. You maybe are going to get a Target gift certificate at best. All week, like you have your entire weekend, a beautiful weekend, and just one of the many massive people that just labor here and make Crossroads a special place for people. Man, thank you. It's an honor to be a minister with you. It really is. Thank you.
You too.
You're a good man. Go home. Really, just walk out. Do not pass go. Take off. You know, all of this is good. All this is good, but there's a new place to go. Why don't you just stand right now? Why don't we all stand right now? Where we need to go is not just standing right now. Where we need to go is standing on the table. I mean, it's one thing for me to get all my stuff up there. It's an entirely different thing for me to say, God, not just my stuff, not just my abilities, everything, my whole entirety is on the table. Let me tell you something right now. We're in here, in this place called Oakley, or a place called Mason, because 2,000 years ago, 12 people put the entirety of their life goals on the table. And actually, one person got off. His name was Judas. So 11 of them, and some others as well, got on the table. And as a result of that, there's been a wave of love that's gone throughout the entire globe, and people are all over the globe today talking about the kind of things we're talking about because of 12 people. I'll tell you what. If 5,000 of the 14,000 people who call Crossroads home all get on the table, game over. Game over. Game over in the entire world. What happens when you have people who live fully consecrated lives? The giving piece, that's much later. But the starting point and the ending point is saying, God, I surrender. You know, in here right now, I've got people who are looking at a table, thinking, I'm never going to go there. That's just not where I'm going to go. We've got some folks who are close to the table and we're maybe just leaning on. We've got a portion of our personhood on the table. We got others who have one time been up on the table and said, I'm getting off. Too much for me getting off the table. And we have others in here who are on the table and getting on the table. Let me pray for you right now. God, I'm praying that you would bring us closer. This spiritual journey is not one towards perfection. This spiritual journey is one towards getting on the table, one of seeing clearly the ways of this world and seeing clearly how your ways change the game. They contrast. Many of us want to just open our hands right now. If you want to do that right now, we just open our hands in the sign of surrender. We want your love to flow through us.
Let your light shine through.
We want to receive more of your grace.
Let your love
We want to willingly say, man, we'll receive more of your resources, and we'll even receive trials that you may have for us. God, we want to live freely and lightly. Pray Crossroads would not be a place where more people sit in chairs, but where more people get on tables. Now, this is a spiritual journey. As you know, we've got all kinds of different things that are coming to help us grow. The weekend services, the guide. Again, get that guide on PDF off the website if you haven't. And the prayer experience is about to begin. It's in your program. We have a multi-day long prayer experience. Give yourself a huge, huge blessing. Carve out 60 minutes and go through a guided prayer experience. I went through it yesterday. I just walked through it to see what it was like. I haven't even really experienced it. And just the walkthrough was awesome. I have these little lights of things that God is giving. And I just went and stood underneath one of these lights that was giving a specific fruit. And I just, oh my God, I would love, would you give that to me? Take advantage of everything that's being offered, and you're gonna just get to that prayer experience. Get there. Experience and the details are in your program. And the journey is continuing. We'll see you next weekend.